It is very good to be with you again. One of the pleasures that I have as the director of the College of Social Justice is that I am called upon to travel around the country fairly often and to join our communities at worship in the wide variety of religious homes that we have across this country. And I have found this year in particular, as perhaps many of you have found as well, that I need to be at least once a week in a community gathered together more than I have needed it in the past. I am looking for courage and wisdom for the meeting of these days, as the hymn suggested. We struggle, I think, to make sense of the changing, ever-changing political climate around us, as well as the disasters that have been happening in recent months. And it often seems like the physical hurricanes that are slamming into communities are met with the daily news by political hurricanes that are slamming us around in one way or another. In difficult times, therefore, it is particularly good to be in a space where we can gather ourselves with some music and some silence and perhaps some prayer or meditation and find some moments of calm and a chance to remember the things that matter to us most. We are in the midst of a long, hard season in our country, in our communities, and especially for already targeted groups, immigrants, Black activists, Muslims. The divisions across our country have become very stark and obvious. But of course, they rest on foundations that have been many, many years in the making. And so the contentiousness and those divisions are not going to disappear anytime very soon. Though many true things can be said about the current state of our union, surely the words from Mother Teresa in one of our readings is one of the truest things we could say. We have forgotten that we belong to each other. One of our greatest tasks, I think, is to remember and to help others to remember that we do, in fact, belong to each other, that we belong with each other, and in fact, that our concept of kinship is meant to be a very large and inclusive one. Remember is a marvelous word. Its Latin roots mean to bring back intensively to mind. But member also, of course, means to be part of something, as in the members of a church. And so remember calls us not only to bring something back to mind, but also to recollect ourselves to and with one another, both senses of the word. Our religious homes, our houses of worship, are meant to be places for that kind of dual recollection. They are places we come to be together, but they are also places we come to remember what matters to us most. When we feel bombarded by difficult news during the course of the day or the week, our attention gets pulled in so many different directions. We can feel overwhelmed and the need to just shut down. Our churches are places designed to help us stay awake. We give ourselves to them because we know that at least some of the time, something will happen here that calls us again to attend. Some shift of perspective or ringing of the heart's bell that will help us stay awake. Author Barry Lopez writes, "Human beings are creatures in search of proportion in life, a pattern of grace. It is balance and beauty we want, not triumph. But we have an appetite for distraction, a tendency toward forgetfulness. We forget what we want to mean. I love that phrase. We forget what we want to mean. We have an appetite for distraction. But we also have a deep hunger to be of use, to stand up against injustice, to relieve suffering, to find a way to speak our words in kindness rather than in fury. We want to mean something. We want our little gifts to count towards something that might leave the world a marginally better place because we passed through it. Remembering this, remembering it amid the relentless busyness and distractions of our lives is what I think it means to try to ground ourselves at the place where justice activism meets or intersects with spiritual grounding. That is where we can cultivate the dual intention of deepening our own awareness and awakeness and goodness on the one hand, while also trying to turn our attention and energy outward to make the world a little bit better as well. The work of the Unitarian Universalist College of Social Justice, which I lead, is meant to be right at that intersection between spirituality and social justice. All of the programs that have been devised to support the mission of the College of Social Justice, which is to inspire and equip and sustain spiritually grounded activism, all of the programs share two things in common. The first is that they are all grounded around experiential learning. That is based on the idea that the kind of learning that can sometimes literally change our lives comes to us not through books or movies or lectures or sermons, but through a face-to-face encounter of some kind with a part of the world's reality that we had not known before. So they're all based around experiential learning. The other thing that they are all grounded in are the core values of Unitarian Universalism. Now, sometimes we think that Unitarian Universalism doesn't actually have shared core values because we know how wide the spectrum of belief is within our gathered congregations. But there really are some core things that we teach that I believe are the things most called for in the political and historical moment that we are now living. These are the things we are most called to remember for our lives out there in the world as well as our internal growth. The first of these is the truth our faith teaches about our interdependence, not only with one another or with people of our own nation or culture or language or color, but with all people and with the earth itself. Unitarian Universalism uses the image of the interdependent web, which is an easy thing to conjure in our mind's eyes because we all know what the perfect webs look like of an orb-weaving spider early in the morning, on the eve of a porch or out in a meadow, before any damage has been done to it and the dew is caught in it, this lovely shining thing. But the interdependence that our core values point us toward is more complex than that physical web we know so well. And it is not always bright and shining. There are difficult questions that lie along its sometimes tangled strands. One of the best ways I have ever heard those questions articulated was by a Latin American liberation theologian by the name of Gustavo Gutierrez. Gutierrez taught that the two most important questions any person of faith can ask ourselves in order to guide our actions in the world actually appear in the early creation story that is held in the book of Genesis, the first book of the Hebrew scriptures, or what we call the Old Testament. It's the part of the story that talks about the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve, but it's the particular part of the story that recounts, in the frame of a myth, the first act of human violence. It's when Cain murders his brother Abel because of jealousy and then runs off and hides in the garden out of shame and confusion. God comes looking for Cain and then asks the two questions. First, where are you? And second, where is your brother? Gutierrez taught that those same two questions are falling into our lives all the time, like an invisible rain. Where are you? Where are we in that tangled matrix of privilege and power? What grace, what goodness have come to us purely by an accident of birth? And then, where is our brother? Where are these siblings of ours who are so often caught on the raw side of those same equations of privilege and power? Asking these questions well is not an easy spiritual practice. Attending to them carefully, asking them with real attention, can make us deeply uncomfortable. But it is what we are called to by that first core value of our faith. It is what our interdependent web calls us to. Not too long ago, I helped lead one of our experiential learning programs, this one specifically for ministers and religious educators in our congregations. And we traveled to the border region between Arizona and Mexico. It's a challenging journey, partly because one of the things that happens on it is people recognize, often for the first time, that immigration policies in our country have mortal consequences. So as part of this experiential journey, we walked some of the desert paths followed by migrants, in which, or in this one county of which, over 100 bodies are pulled every single year. One county in Arizona. At the end of this experiential journey, the ministers were gathered around a makeshift altar preparing to return home, and we had placed on it pebbles that had been gleaned from that desert walk along the migrant trails. Each person was invited to take one of those pebbles and then to speak a few words about what they would be bringing home with them from the experience. One of my colleagues, when it was his turn, got up and took his pebble and then sat back down and did something unusual. He took the shoe off his foot, put the pebble in it, and then put the shoe back on his foot. And he said, "These days that we have spent together have been eye-opening and heartbreaking and deeply uncomfortable. I'm putting this stone in my shoe because I am not willing to go back to being comfortable in the face of this crisis. It is there so that my physical discomfort will continue to evoke my soul's disquiet, which I regard as holy." This holy disquiet is not an easy practice, but it can bring us into the light of our second core truth, which declares the wholeness of every single person. This is the radical declaration that no human life is inherently worth more than another, and that no human being is disposable. It challenges the categories and the labels that we use so often and so unconsciously, by which we diminish one another and separate ourselves into small circles we can define as us. If every person is inherently worthy, then every person is worthy of inclusion in that circle. Inclusion is a soul-enlarging practice. When we start to really see and to challenge the barriers in our own minds and hearts that get erected by fear or habit or plain old ignorance, the space in which we can begin to move becomes more ample. We push out the edges of what we sometimes call our comfort zones. In June Jordan's beautiful language, we recognize your sky may burn with light, while mine at the same moment spreads beautiful to darkness as we corner the circling universe of our experience. In honoring the truth of different lived experience, we breathe the easier air of connection and companionship. We hear the stories told in other voices, catch a glimpse of reality as it is seen through other eyes. Our understanding expands with this practice of glad curiosity we can bring to one another. The times through which we are living are in urgent need of this embracing practice. The capacity to see and to recognize kin across every barrier of distance and language and culture is a deeply inherent one in us as human beings. We know that because of our own experience of kinship with strangers, and also because of all the shining moments in which that has been enacted in our history together. The stranger who runs into a burning building to save someone he never knew. The woman who devotes herself to challenging an injustice that never fell directly on her. The possibility of kinship is inherent in us as human beings. But our ability to see and honor connection is matched or exceeded by our enthusiastic embrace of the most violent forms of division. This, too, is bred at the bone. We are easily frightened, and our fear can drive us to extremes. Fear is being used as a tool of political division now, today, to a degree that I, at least, have never witnessed before in my life. It has been used to other our fellow human beings into categories which are dehumanizing and therefore can be reacted against. Immigrants, Mexicans, Muslims, felons, activists, journalists. And lest we feel the faint stirrings of self-righteousness, I will hasten to add that those of us who choose to seat ourselves on the left side of the aisle are well practiced in this habit too. We willingly other and diminish people we regard and label as the alt-right, Trump supporters, evangelical Christians, Tea Party activists. We should passionately oppose laws and policies that diminish other people or make a god out of profit. But our willingness to make other people into two-dimensional enemies is a kind of tribalism driven by fear, and each one of us carries that impulse within us. It is part of being human. However, even when we are afraid, we get to choose between the closing in of that tribalism and the opening out of kinship and connection. Our faith calls us to that opening out. The third core truth of Unitarian Universalism is that we are all works in progress. We are not yet the human beings we aspire to be. I sometimes frame it as we are all simply half-baked. We are flawed and we stumble. We hurt one another and we fail. But our universalist ancestors did not declare that they could not believe in hell because they thought human beings were perfect. That became part of their teaching and their theology because they realized there was a better response to human imperfection than damnation. To recognize and to bow to the notion that we are all flawed but in progress brings in its wake some therefore clauses. Therefore, we should practice grace rather than defensiveness when we make mistakes, since making mistakes literally comes with the territory of being human. Therefore, we must engage in forgiveness of others because we ourselves will so often need it. And therefore, we must engage in the kind of deep looking that will allow us to see our own shadows, especially when we're carrying ourselves out into the political sphere to try to make change. Now, think for a moment back to that song that we sang together, God of Grace and God of Glory. So often the songs that we sing, especially about making justice in our world, are full of the steady confidence that we are the good guys out there to change the world, that we know where we're going and we can get there together. They are often really inspiring, and most of them I actually love to sing. But listen to what a different feeling is evoked by those lyrics we sang this morning. Cure thy children's warring madness. Bend our pride to thy control. Shame our wanton, selfish gladness, rich in things and poor in soul. Try not to trip over the theology and listen not to what the words say about God, but what they say about us. Cure our madness, bend our pride, heal our wounds, and then grant us wisdom and courage. Our faith calls us to a spiritual honesty, mindful, that all of those things we hope to change out there also have seeds or tendrils in here. Changing the world is inseparable from the willingness to be changed ourselves. Our Unitarian Universalism has always been focused on this life and on this world, calling us toward action to mend the torn places as well as we are able. But this faith of ours has never simply been about what we are called to do. It is also about who we are called to be. We are called not only to be people of action, but also people of attention, willing to awaken, willing to remember, to be reminded of our kinship, and to remember what we want to mean. A Jewish proverb teaches, a human life is like a single letter of the alphabet. It can mean little, or it can become part of a great meaning. May we allow ourselves to be part of that great meaning. Amen.